What are the similarities between the founders of Islam and Mormonism? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is The American Muhammad, Joseph Smith, Founder of Mormonism. It's written by regular guest Dr. Alvin Schmidt. You can purchase The American Muhammad by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, or you can find out more at issuesetc.org. The American Muhammad, The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April.
Why did you participate in the Gosnell blackout? The President of the United States could be asked about this, since he fought against protections for these children that were born alive when he was in the Illinois Senate.
The President is aware of this. The President does not and cannot take a position on an ongoing trial.
There's somebody singing the music, and nobody else is singing along. And Luther would look at that and probably just tap somebody on the shoulder and say, you know, I had the same problem with the Church of Rome.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love Issues Etc.
If you're going to start a religion, you really, once you get the ball rolling, right, you're going to deal with all different aspects of life. Now, one of the things that often comes up, especially in our postmodern age, when someone charts off a new religious direction, they head for a new frontier, they want to start their own religion or they want to spin off of an old one, cult leaders, whatever they may be. We often simply regard these people as mentally unbalanced, don't we? Just as a matter of fact, they are not sane. Sane people don't start their own religions. That's kind of axiomatic. Well, is that necessarily true? And what about the two perhaps greatest examples of people who have successfully, very successfully, started their own religions, one being Muhammad and the other Joseph Smith? Were they sane? And what were their other aspirations, if any? Not just religious, but perhaps even political. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 18th of April. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. It's actually the 17th of April. I apologize. A little bit later in the second hour of the program, we'll be talking with Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard News Service about lessons that he has learned as a religion columnist for the last 25 years and a reporter before that. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be with us to talk about God and suffering, especially in light of the tragic bombings and attacks there in Boston. But first, in hour one, we're going to conclude our four-part series on the parallels between Joseph Smith and Muhammad today, the psychological and the political parallels as well. And we're giving away copies of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April, The American Muhammad, to listeners with the best questions or comments during this hour. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943-877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And you can go to our Facebook fan page. We've left space there for you to ask a question or a comment during the conclusion of our four-part series on the parallels between Joseph Smith and Muhammad. A question for Dr. Schmidt at facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is a regular guest. He's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, and he's author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April, The American Muhammad. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me again.
Were Muhammad and Joseph Smith, these two self-proclaimed prophets, were they sane in your estimation?
Well, Todd, you ask good questions. In fact, it's a tough question. I would say yes. And, of course, in our day and age, the word insane or being given to is usually equated with mental illness, which is a conception that I have never bought. These people were sane, but they were also mad in the sense of their objective, what they were doing. But they were not what we would say mentally ill or sick, by no means. That's perhaps how we would look at it today in many different contexts, but I don't think that's the case at all. They very well knew what they were doing and be able to take advantage of people in order to improve their objectives or achieve their objectives. And one of the things that I have often mentioned, even when I was still a professor, we tend to today have a very wrong and erroneous concept of what is mental illness, as it's commonly called. A person commits a crime and then he's seen as mentally ill, or we say that's sick behavior. I often said it's not sick behavior. It is evil behavior. And in this case, both men were evil men, but they were sane, I would say. I don't think they were insane at all.
So it's a little difficult to do from the distance of the 6th and 7th century A.D. with Muhammad. Joseph Smith's perhaps a little easier. But how do you go about kind of constructing a psychological profile of someone who decides that he's hearing from God and proclaims himself to be the prophet? In the case of both of these men, the definitive, at least up to that date, prophet for God. How do you go about it?
Well, actually, I guess you have to look at what they did. They proclaimed themselves prophets, appointed themselves as such, and then made announcements that they called revelations that they received from God. And, Muhammad was called as an imposter for over 1,000 years. From the 8th century on, he was called by many Christians and other scholars as an imposter, namely meaning that a person who presented himself to be something that he really himself knew he wasn't. And similarly with Joseph Smith, he was called an imposter. In fact, he was even convicted in a court of law in 1826 as an imposter, which didn't change his behavior at all. And so they taught that they were prophets of God, in spite of the fact that they both admitted that they had received some revelations from Satan. Well, then the question would obviously arise, if you had received some revelation from Satan, then how come why aren't the rest of your revelations from Satan too? Well, apparently they never asked that question or didn't really care. Their objective was to get people to follow them, and they were very successful at it. People saw them as prophet, largely as a result of biblical ignorance. For example, how prophets were chosen or approved of in the Old Testament. They didn't have a clue regarding that. So if a guy was a gifted speaker, had charismatic personality, made audacious claims, people followed him. And they may have, and some did, discover that both of them were imposters and left Islam, and they left Smith's religion of Mormonism, but many of them did not. And I'm always reminded of a book that I cite in the book Sebastian Brandt, 1494. He wrote a book, Ship of Fools, in which it's basically a satire of human behavior, in which he points out that most people really ultimately like to be deceived. And so if someone claims to be a prophet, as Smith and Muhammad did, it wasn't that difficult to deceive people because many of them, deep down inside, wanted to be deceived, although they certainly weren't conscious of the fact.
One other question before we get into the particulars of their psychological affinities for one another. Would you say, and I don't know your opinions on this classification, it is controversial even today in the psychological community, would you say a better term for both of these men at any given moment in their religious careers would be sociopathic?
Yes, I think you could say that. But that doesn't mean, I don't think that they were insane, to go back to our earlier conversation. They were, in many ways they were sociopathic, right.
Let's talk about one of the characteristics that's less controversial that you establish as something shared by both Joseph Smith and Muhammad, and that is the narcissism. What is it, and where do you find it in their actions or writings?
Well, that's a very interesting concept, narcissism. And narcissism basically is a psychological concept that borrows the term of narcissus from a Greek mythology, where the boy by the name of Narcissus looked into a pool of water and saw his reflection and fell in love with it. In other words, a narcissist is an individual who has a high opinion of himself, who rarely thinks he can do any wrong, who wants a constant support of what he says or does, and finds fault with anyone who doesn't agree with him, or anything that doesn't work out according to his plan is always someone else's fault. And both Smith and Muhammad were classic narcissists. I might also add, the history of the world shows, for example, that most dictators whether it was Hitler or Stalin or even Napoleon. These individuals were all narcissists, and Muhammad and Smith followed in that path, if I may use that term.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. This is the conclusion of our four-part series with him on the parallels between Joseph Smith and Muhammad. Today we're talking about their psychological and political parallels. We'll get right back into it on the other side of the break. We're also giving away copies of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for April that Dr. Schmidt has authored, The American Muhammad, to listeners with the best questions or comments in this hour, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email right here in the studio. We get them in real time. talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at @issuesetc, or we have left space at our Facebook fan page for you. Leave a question or comment on the parallels, in general parallels between Muhammad and Joseph Smith, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. Our call-in number again, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-6943. talkback@issuesetc.org, our Twitter address @issuesetc. Or our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Dr. Alvin Schmidt, he's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for April, called The American Muhammad. When we come back, we're going to talk a bit about, beyond their narcissism, their alter egos, the way that they dominated their subordinates. The parallels here are truly remarkable. The fact that both of these men apparently, in spite of all the negative things that we can establish about them, had some kind of charisma that lent a lot of credence to the things that they claimed. We'll get into more of the psychological parallels between Joseph Smith and Muhammad right after this.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
When someone asks you, what do you believe as a Christian, how do you respond? Do you have a confession of faith? I've written an article in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled, I Believe. You can read it by subscribing to the Issues Etc. journal. Just look for the subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Mark Hemingway answers the question, why Lutheranism, with why not? Subscribe to the online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The saints at Gethsemane Evangelical Lutheran Church in downtown Marion, Ohio, invite you to join us as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation, which He won for us in His perfect life, death, and resurrection. Sunday school for all ages begins at 9:15 a.m. with a divine service following at 10:30. Visit our website, gethsemane-lcms.org, or find us on Facebook to learn more about our confessional, historical, and liturgical congregation.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe that traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The Gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the Church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the Gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilk. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're concluding our four-part series on the parallels between Joseph Smith and Muhammad today, the psychological and political parallels between the two. When you talk about alter egos, what do you mean by that, Dr. Schmidt?
Yeah, well, that's a psychological term that is perhaps not that commonly known on the street, by the average person, but it's very common in psychological courses at the university and colleges. An alter ego is basically where an individual, his self does not only reside in himself, but also in someone else who is usually a close associate. And so his ego, his self, is not just within himself, but also in another person. And that person, for example, is often very useful to the individual, or the alter ego is very useful to the individual. And Smith had his alter ego. Muhammad had his alter ego in Abu Bakr, who, by the way, helped Muhammad escape in 622 from Mecca to Medina when his life was in danger, hid in a cave several days. And he was, in many ways, very subservient to, for example, Muhammad, kind of a sycophant, if you will, did whatever he wanted. And by the way, it paid off. When Muhammad died, he then became his successor. Now, if we move to Joseph Smith, he had his alter ego in a person by the name of Sidney Rigdon, a very prominent individual in Smith that he joined, as best as we can tell, shortly after Smith founded his church in 1830. Rigdon was, compared to Smith, 10 years his senior, a gifted, eloquent speaker, largely a self-taught individual, but very well-versed. He was a former Campbellite clergyman and also a former Baptist preacher before he joined or linked Joseph Smith. Now, he did much of his the writing and encouraging for Joseph Smith, and at the same time, and this is the sort of an irony with alter egos, and it was true for Muhammad, it was true also for Joseph Smith. When, in spite of the fact that they're sort of dependent on this alter ego, there are times, for example, they would treat them very unkindly. Smith did that, Muhammad did that. And yet these individuals, their alter ego, so to speak, would remain loyal. And this was a case of Smith, Sidney Rigdon for Smith, and likewise with Abu Bakr. And so these individuals are used by the leader. Muhammad used them, Smith used them to achieve their ends. Rigdon would write famous speeches and arouse and get crowds enthusiastic relative to Smith's cause. Even in the just preceding the Missouri Mormon War that began in August of 1838, he already in June gave a couple of powerful sermons. One was the Salt Sermon, where he indicated that anybody who wasn't 100% in favor of doing what Smith wanted to do, they were basically called dissenters. It was called the Salt Sermon. He preached a sermon on salt. In other words, using the biblical analogy that if someone, the salt has lost its savor, it's to be treaded on and basically misused. And that's how, for example, he spoke of those who were dissenters. Again, served as Smith's right arm, so to speak, in terms of achieving or trying to achieve the goals that Smith was after. And ultimately, it led to a Smith, which he wanted to do, to fight and try to eliminate the Missouri people who were opposed to the Mormons and Smith's ideology and his practices.
Let's talk a bit about their personal charisma, because even though, in much of our conversation here over the last 4 hours that we've spent talking about it in this series, I think one rightly gets the impression that if you saw Joseph Smith or Muhammad coming down the street toward you, you'd probably be advised to walk the other way to avoid them. But people didn't. Not everybody did. Many people followed them quite willingly. What was it about their personal charisma?
Well, they had, this is another concept that we tend not to understand or hear much about, but very often we are taken in by it. One can argue, and it has been argued by many people and making a good case for it, that many leaders in history often were successful in gaining people or having them follow them because they were able to manifest a large amount of charisma. Now, the word charisma is a Greek term. It can be defined something as a gift of grace. In other words, people see the individual having a special gift of grace, really ultimately coming from God. And so, for example, if I may use one that some of us may remember or at least have heard about, when, for example, Hitler would speak 3-4 hours and people shout, Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil. Well, they were caught up in a frenzy, but they were manifesting or had projected onto Hitler a charisma, a gift of grace. And it's just similar, for example, with a lot of other leaders. And charisma can be both evil and can be sometimes very good. Jesus Christ had a lot of charisma in the sense of goodness. And people like Napoleon and Hitler and Stalin and other individuals had charisma in terms of evil. So the gift of grace, as it's perceived by people, and they project it on the individual. It's not entirely the individual leader's doing. It's the people who, in a part, in a sense, contribute to it too, by means of what I said, they project it onto him, and the leader takes advantage of this, and they will follow him. Let's take Winston Churchill in World War II, when England was alone, and basically it was his charisma that kept the Allies together and from prevented Britain from succumbing to the Nazi blitzkrieg. Another example of a charisma where you would say it was wholesome and salutary for the benefit of society and history. So both Muhammad and Smith had a lot of charisma, which helps explain why people followed him. For example, going to Smith, when he spoke, even though his language was somewhat broken English, it wasn't well polished because he only spent about a year or two in grade school. I cite examples of people where just, for example, they were enthralled. And sometimes it's a personal characteristic in addition to a person speaking that enhances the charisma that people perceive in the person. Smith had a limp when he walked. Something that I think he was 10 years old, he had a severe infection of his arm, of his leg, and up. The doctors made the incision, and so ever since then he had a limp. And many analysts have said that added to his charisma. He was a tall individual, about 6'1", which in that day and age was taller than by far than most people, and given his limp, given his, for example, his ability to persuade people with all kinds of so-called revelations, they followed him, and for the most part, thought they had indeed a genuine prophet. And so charisma works to their advantage, and both men, Muhammad and Smith, were charismatic individuals, however, not to the good of society as such.
Let's talk a little bit, if we could, about their political aspirations before we get to our many questions from our listeners. Beginning with the fact that both of these men appear to have, well, did they get rich off of their deceptions?
Yes, they did. In fact, Muhammad, very early at the Battle of Badr, and it's stated in the Quran, that of all the caravans that were traveling with merchandise, trading, and selling across the sands of Arabia were intercepted by him. Very often he killed the whole crew of the caravan, and then they would take the plunder, the booty, so to speak. And in the Quran, in the 8th surah, the 8th chapter, it spells out that he was to get 1/5 of everything that was taken. And the 1/5 was for him and Allah, but he was a representative of Allah, and so he really took it all. That added immensely to his wealth. When you come to Smith, you have a similar example in that, for example, when people joined Mormonism, they had to bequeath, give their property that was called consecrated, and as a result of that, he had access to a lot of funds that people had given, and so he became, yes, quite wealthy. When they moved to Nauvoo after he escaped from Missouri in 1839, he had enough money to buy the swampy land around Nauvoo and establish it, and he bought extra property, for example, and sold it at higher prices, and so, yes, he became prosperous, and so did Muhammad. Another parallel that is often perhaps not even thought of, but very true.
We have about a minute or so before we take our next break, Dr. Schmidt. Briefly, Would it be fair to say that the political aspirations of both these men, Muhammad and Joseph Smith, were for a theocracy where they were the supreme leader of all their followers?
Oh, yes. In fact, I discussed that at quite some length, that they were both theocrats, meaning that they saw themselves as God's representative and to govern people according to their revelation, which they said they received from God. And it's known even to this day that Islam is seen as a theocratic religion. It is not just a religion, but it's political and religion. And there, for example, Ayatollah Khomeini, when in 1979 came out of exile to Iran, he was, for example, the theocrat. And Iran is governed to this day in the theocratic sense, and so are many other Muslim countries. Similarly, when we move to Joseph Smith, he governed Nauvoo as a function of the theocrat. Nauvoo was a theocracy, and I explain in the book how this particular theocracy functioned on his part.
We'll pick it up right there when we come back, and we'll get to some of your questions as we conclude our four-part series on the parallels between Joseph Smith and Muhammad. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. He's authored the book, The American Muhammad, Joseph Smith, Founder of Mormonism.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Holy Trinity Lutheran, Garfield, New Jersey. Grace Lutheran, Naples, Florida. St. John's Lutheran, Chicago, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Unionville, Michigan. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Beverly Hills, California. Epiphany Lutheran, Door, Michigan. The Good Shepherd Lutheran, Inglewood, California. St. John's Lutheran, Sayville, New York. Apostles Lutheran, Melrose Park, Illinois. Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Elizabeth, Colorado. Grace Lutheran, Strasburg, Illinois. And Bethel Lutheran, Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal, the Issues Etc. 300.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I'm going to be making the case that postmodernity, rather than dying and going away, has actually become the default setting for the way people think in many of the churches today.
Chris Roseborough, on his presentation, Postmodernism in the Church, at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois.
As a result of it, it constitutes a significant threat against biblical, historic, Orthodox Christianity because its epistemology is extremely irrational, subjective based, and in fact, it's even a form of enthusiasm, God withinism, that at the end of the day has as its project the eroding away and deconstructing of what historic Christianity teaches and confesses.
You can find out more about the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois, at issuesetc.org.
Well, Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. It's Wednesday afternoon, the 17th of April, and we're concluding our four-part series on the parallels between Joseph Smith and Muhammad. Today, the psychological and political parallels between these two religious leaders. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest, Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, and he's author of the Issues Etc. book of the month for April called The American Muhammad. Speaking of that great book that he's just come out with, there's going to be a book signing for The American Muhammad featuring Dr. Schmidt, its author. And it's going to be Saturday, May the 4th on the campus of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. You'll find information at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. A signing of the book, The American Muhammad, Saturday, May the 4th on the campus of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Schmidt, picking up where we left off before the break, you said that Nauvoo, this first formal settlement of Joseph Smith and his followers, was run as a theocracy. Give us a few details.
Yes, well, actually, it was not really the first. He did it already in Kirtland, Ohio, and then to some extent, short-lived as it was, in Far West, which was the name of the town in Missouri before the Missouri-Mormon War broke out. But it really flourished and blossomed as a theocracy, his governing of Nauvoo in Nauvoo from 1839 to the time that he was assassinated in June of 1844. Ironically, the state of Illinois gave him in 1841 power that had never been given to any community or leader before. It was called the Nauvoo Charter. And as a result of that, it made Nauvoo a state within a state, independent of outside governmental influence. It was a state within a state. I like to repeat that. And Nauvoo was not just a mere city or a mere town. It was a theocratic principality with Smith at its religious head and its civil or civic head that possessed sovereign rights and powers unique not only in Illinois but for the entire nation. And as I show in the book, for example, it was clear that Smith saw this kind of government as the only model that would be appropriate for the United States. And that was his aim. It was his theocracy in Nauvoo was not enough. He was hoping to have he called it theodemocracy. That's the actual word that he used, theodemocracy, that would be ultimately someday governed in the United States. And that's why he, in March of 1844, 3 months before he was assassinated, had declared himself as a presidential candidate of the United States. And by the way, he picked Sidney Rigdon to be his vice president. Now we go back to the alter ego thing that we were talking before about again. And so he had visions of grandeur, even though he was at the same time basically accused of treason, and still had many times he was unrealistic. He didn't seem to realize the difficulties that he would probably never overcome. But nevertheless, he declared himself as president, and had he not been assassinated, he would have been put on a ballot, as far as we can tell, in 1844 in the fall to be elected. And his goal was, as I said, to make the entire country ultimately what Nauvoo was, a theocracy governed by a religious leader who also occupied the civic office as well. And so that was Smith's big dream. It obviously didn't succeed.
One other quick question. You note about both men that neither of them named a successor. Why is that a significant parallel between these two men?
Well,
about
because,
a minute or
because I think neither one of them had any, given their belief that they were prophets, it didn't seem to occur to them that someday they would not be here anymore. Or you might say they were so wrapped up in their trying to achieve certain goals and objectives that was a minor thing and never really was important to them to pick a successor. And again, a parallel because, for the most part, these individuals, as I argue throughout the book, all of these parallels, can be seen as a result of these men having a similar mindset. If there is a similar mindset, you and I can understand why similar behavior patterns will happen. And that's exactly what operated between Smith and Muhammad. They had the same mindset, same outlook of life, the same goals. And that basically explains the parallels. And I might mention, that argument has never been made about parallels relative to historic individuals. What makes them common? Some have said before, oh, they share a common humanity, so they did certain things. But I argue it's more than a common humanity. It was a similar mindset that they had.
Let's go to the phones. First, let's go to Festus, Missouri, where Norm is waiting on the line. Hi, Norm.
Greetings. Appreciate the opportunity to share this afternoon. I want to just ask, well, we know that Muhammad and Joseph Smith had some fundamental misunderstandings of Christ and his kingdom according to the Bible. Islam can use violence as a means of establishing its kingdom. Christ said, my kingdom is not of this world, and so on. If it were, my servants would fight, and so forth. But he says, my kingdom is not from this world. So there's a distinction we make in the church between the church and the state and its responsibilities and so on. Is there a way in which Islam uses violence that is especially or somewhat different from the way in which Mormonism uses it or has used it in the past? And then in terms of present-day policy of the Mormon Church, is there any violence that's used today?
That's a great question. Thank you very much, Norm. Thanks for listening, Festus. Dr. Schmidt.
Yeah, well, actually, I think a couple of questions in the man's question. Yes, both Smith and Muhammad saw them, and here we go back again, as theocrats, that they were to govern this way. Now, in the Quran, it's very clear that, for example, violence is part of Islam, even though we in the media hear that Islam is a peaceful religion. Well, there are over 100 violent passages directed against you and me who are, in the Quran's language, Muhammad's language, infidels, unbelievers. And these passages are in the present tense. They're not something that happened in the past. And so when given Muslims today engage in violence or terrorism of some kind, they're basically following the Quran right down the line, so to speak. Now, with Joseph Smith, in his day, for example, he too used violence, very much so. And that's what explains the Missouri Mormon War that existed from August 6th to October 38th to October 31st in 1838. And even when he was in Nauvoo, he had built up an army, if you will, called the Nauvoo Legion. It was and it consisted of 5,000 men, basically, again, not only to protect himself, but to move on and eventually someday conquer the United States. And so that was true of Joseph Smith. I must say today, Mormonism doesn't advocate violence as Smith did. So it has changed. In that sense, Mormonism has sort of become acculturated to the American culture and values. It has not changed Islam. Islam is still basically a violent religion. On the other hand, I have to say, in all fairness, that Mormonism is not a violent religion.
Herman is listening in Illinois. Hi, Herman.
Thank you. Dr. Schmidt, leading into the event at Nauvoo of Joseph Smith's death in a gunfight when he was in the jail, wasn't it really the case that the most intense opposition to him wasn't necessarily outside of the Mormon circles, but arose from within Mormon circles over those who felt that they had been deceived and swindled by him?
Good question. Thank you very much, Herman.
I don't think that was really the reason behind it. Joseph Smith had been seen by the surrounding areas of Nauvoo as a threat, or Mormonism was seen as a threat. Given what he did, given what he claimed, there were a lot of things that were going on, for example, under Smith's direction. For example, I think I mentioned it in a previous interview we had. he had a bodyguard assassin by the name of Orrin Porter Rockwell, who, for example, and I document in the book from Mormon sources that were very much inside the circle, so to speak, in Smith's time, would actually execute people whom Smith saw as a threat. And so, in that sense, a lot of the people who weren't Mormon were afraid of what is going to happen if this place, Nauvoo and Smith, continues to prosper and grow. And so I'd say the assassination of him in the Carthage jail, about 15, 20 miles from Nauvoo, took place as a result of people taking the law in their own hands, so to speak. They actually didn't have the right to do it, but they did. It was a mob that stormed the jail and ended up killing Joseph and his brother Hiram.
When we come back from this break, we'll have more of your questions and your comments for Dr. Alvin Schmidt as we conclude our four-part series on the parallels between Joseph Smith and Muhammad. Today we're talking about the psychological parallels and the political parallels, but we've left time here at the end for your questions and your comments about anything related to the parallels between these two religious leaders. 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org. Or go to our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Did you know that Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, sells CDs and audio downloads of teachings by some of the top Lutheran theologians in the country? Check out Logia's 99-cent download of the month at shop.logia.org, shop.logia.org. You'll also find books published by Luther Academy and, of course, the quarterly Logia Journal at shop.logia.org. Continuing education for the confessional Lutheran, shop.logia.org.
Higher Things assists in cultivating, encouraging, and promoting a distinctively Lutheran identity among their youth and young adults. To fulfill this mission, this summer, Higher Things has three conferences. You can find out more about these conferences at fromabove2013.org. The winter issue of Higher Things magazine is now available. This is a topical issue on church and state that you can read in its entirety on our website, higherthings.org.
Christological, creedal, confessional. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here's a special offer for Issues Etc. listeners. For any size gift during the Easter season, we'll send you a recording of an Ascension and Pentecost sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. Issues Etc., Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. And for any size gift between Easter Sunday and Pentecost Sunday, May 19th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Ascension and Pentecost sermons. Now, when you make your gift, please indicate whether you want a downloadable version or a CD of these sermons. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us during the Easter season.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're concluding our series on the parallels between Joseph Smith and Muhammad, the founder of Mormonism, the founder of Islam. Now, you've seen in the course of our series with Dr. Schmidt how well-researched his case is for the parallels between these two men. And coming up this summer, we're going to ask him to lend that expertise and that ability to make a case to our Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. He's going to be presenting on the subject of making the case against Islam. He'll cover all of this, both religious and political aspects of Islam as a religion and a worldview. at our Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June the 14th and the 15th. That's a Friday and a Saturday, right here in Collinsville, Illinois. The price of the conference is only $100 a person. It includes three meals and 2 days of the conference. We'll kick it off with a live remote broadcast of Issues Etc. at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois. And then the conference will commence. We will have several of our very best guests there. Dr. Rod Rosenblatt will be there as kind of the featured speaker. He's going to be making the case for Christ alone and the case against pietism. Pastor Will Whedon will join us to make the case for classical Christian worship. Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith will be making the case against postmodernism in the church. And Suzanne Venker will be making the secular case against feminism. I'll be speaking as well, making the case for confessional Christianity. At the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June the 14th and the 15th. In Collinsville, Illinois, register online, issuesetc.org. You'll see a place to click to register for the Making the Case Conference, or you can call Craig right here and ask for him. He will help you through the process of registering for the conference and making your payment, 618-223-8385. Ask for Craig, 618-223-8385. Dr. Schmidt, this question comes from Trey in Wyoming. It's an interesting one. I don't think we've dealt with it yet in the series. He says, did either Joseph Smith or Muhammad dabble in other religions before creating their own religion?
Not really. Both of them tried, in a sense, I think you might say, and that's putting the best construction on it, perhaps to see some value in Christianity, but not very deeply so in terms of their looking into it. So, no, because Smith, for example, very early in his life began to think that God was talking to him through the angel Moroni and so on and so forth, and that he was to replace Christianity, which was corrupted. And a very similar thing, and here we have another parallel with Muhammad. Christianity was corrupted. The Bible was corrupted, and as a result of that, they both produced their own sacred book, so to speak, Muhammad, the Quran, and then with Smith, the Book of Mormon, as well as Doctrine and Covenants and the Pearl of Great Price. Smith was very clear in condemning Christianity, and he called it the abominable church. I might mention today some Mormons say, well, he meant the Catholic Church. The word Catholic does not occur even, for example, in any of Smith's writings. And so he had the Christian Church in mind. And it's also similar with Muhammad. The Bible was a corrupted textbook. The Jews corrupted the Old Testament. The Christians corrupted the New Testament. And so he had to bring to the people a pure holy book, namely called the Quran, which is stored in heaven on a perfect tablet and was brought down by the angel Gabriel and then to Muhammad. And so, no, I'd say neither one dabbled in other religions before they really got involved. They gave some thought to it here and there, but nothing really serious that I can determine.
Jim listens in Kenosha, Wisconsin. He says, it seems that both Islam and Mormonism are willing to lie and tell half-truths to win people over. The Mormon will insist that he is a good Christian. The Muslim will talk glowingly about Jesus and pray with non-Muslims. Do you think this is connected to the fact that both false religions piggyback their new revelations to established Christian scriptures?
Yeah, in many ways there's a good connection there. For example, with Mormons, Mormons today, for example, are very adept, and the media seem to go along with it. They don't seem to question it. They call themselves increasingly Christian. Now, Joseph Smith never, ever called himself a Christian. Yes, he did use the word Jesus Christ in the official title. Initially, when the church was formed by Joseph Smith in 1830, he called it simply Church of Christ. Then 4 years later, he changed it a little bit, and then in 38, another 4 years later, he changed it to the present title, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But that didn't mean, for example, that he called and considered himself a Christian. Now, in recent years, Mormons try to pass themselves off as a Christian. They often use the argument saying, well, it's part of our church's title, Jesus Christ. Well, that doesn't make you a Christian, because Mormons are not Christians. They reject the deity of Christ. They reject salvation by faith alone. They also believe in multiple gods. Joseph Smith is very clear about this in his Pearl of Great Price and in some of his sermons that he preached. There were multiple gods that were involved in the creation, so on and so forth. All of this is contrary to Christianity. And Joseph Smith also didn't believe that Jesus Christ atoned for the sins of the world on the cross, but in the Garden of Gethsemane. In addition to that, Joseph Smith and Mormons to this very day despise any kind of symbolism of the cross. It is simply not found. And I talk about that in the book at great length as to why this is the case. Similar with Muhammad. Muhammad despised the Christian cross. And there are even some Muslims, for example, that have trouble with the arithmetic plus sign because it reminds them of a cross. And so that's, again, the parallel between these two individuals. Both of them wanted to start a different religion because Christianity was corrupt, and that's the same thing that Muhammad said. So that's why we have Islam, and that's why we have Mormonism.
Justin in Chatfield, Minnesota, how are the two religions similar yet different in dealing with those who leave their respective religions? For example, beheading versus disappearing in the Utah desert. At the time of both Muhammad and at the time of Joseph Smith, how did they deal with defectors?
Well, yes. Taking Islam, first of all, Islam to this day. If you leave, you are guilty of blasphemy and infidel or traitor, and you will be executed. Very, very clear. Muhammad said, for example, in the Hadith, that there's no room in Arabia for two religions. Another one time he said, whoever changes his religion, kill him. So that is exactly, and it's happening to this day. For example, in country of Iran and other Muslim countries, when an individual questions Muhammad or questions the religion, that person puts his or her life on the line. Now, with Joseph Smith, in his day, he obviously, there were some individuals that we said were killed by the bodyguard assassin he had. On the other hand, we have to remember, Smith did not have the power. He lived in a country that was governed by democratic principles, and he didn't have the power or the wherewithal to get rid of people who were against his Mormon teachings. In fact, the dissidents were threatened in Missouri. In fact, some of them left as a result in the middle of the night. One of them was Thomas Marsh, who then took an oath, an affidavit vowing, for example, that Smith had claimed himself to be Muhammad and that he had said, as Muhammad said, the Quran or the sword, I say to you, Joseph Smith or the sword. So they were fearful of their lives. They had received information in Missouri that they would be hanged the next morning. So they escaped in the middle of the night. But yet, for the most part, Smith did not have the top power and the wherewithal to carry out designs to do away with dissenters. He was not very successful at that.
One real quick question, with only a minute to respond. Is there a difference in the eschatology of these two religions, of these two men, end times view? Jolene asks, with only a minute to respond there.
Yes, in a sense, there's a similarity there, too. Both of them, for example, believe that there will be a resurrection at the end of time. Mormonism is very much imbued with a millennialistic understanding of the end of time, whereas with Muhammad and Islam, that's not necessarily the case, but they do believe in terms of eschatology, meaning things of the latter days. There's a similarity there, yes, but not totally identical.
Norm in Festus, Missouri, and Jim in Kenosha, Wisconsin, if you would send us your mailing addresses to talkback@issuesetc.org, we will send you a copy of The American Muhammad. Thanks to everybody for all your questions. For Dr. Alvin Schmidt, he's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for April. This is a book that's been a long time coming and one that has never been written before. Some of the ideas have been presented elsewhere, but not all together and not in this comprehensive way, about the parallels of these two self-proclaimed prophets, Joseph Smith and the founder of Islam, Muhammad. It's called The American Muhammad. You can call Concordia Publishing House and order this book, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or you can browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. It's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April. The American Muhammad by Dr. Alvin Schmidt. Dr. Schmidt, thank you very much for being our guest.
My pleasure, very much so.
In Hour 2 of Issues Etc., we're going to spend the first part of it talking with Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard News Service. He has written their On Religion column now this week for 25 years, and he was a religion reporter all along and even before. We're going to talk to him about lessons learned after 25 years of being a religion columnist, and especially in the last 5 or 6 years, staring intently into religion coverage in the media in general. His insights are always valuable. Terry Mattingly, to kick off Hour 2 of Issues, etc. Then Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will join us, of course. The nation is still reeling from the bombing in Boston. The news that comes out of it is incredibly and painfully slow. The stories are gut-wrenching, and so many questions remain unanswered for law enforcement, for investigators. But the question that is always asked after something like this is, what is God doing? Or is this God's doing? Or is this God simply standing out of the way and letting evil have its way? How do we deal with God in times of suffering? We'll answer that question in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. More Issues, Etc. in 5 minutes.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Repentance and forgiveness, sin and grace, law and gospel, more than cliches, real preaching for real people in need of hearing the real Christ. Christ for You and the Divine Service at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, where we gather every Saturday night at 6 and on the Lord's Day, Sunday mornings at 7:45 and 10. Look for the Church of the Neon Cross on I-55 between exits 30 and 33. Find us on the web, stpaullutheranchurchhamel.org. St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, where there is the forgiveness of sins, life and salvation for the people of God.
What are the similarities between the founders of Islam and Mormonism? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is The American Muhammad, Joseph Smith, Founder of Mormonism. It's written by regular guest Dr. Alvin Schmidt. You can purchase The American Muhammad by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, or you can find out more at issuesetc.org. The American Muhammad, The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April.